homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today, which is the 21st of June, we are commemorating Vaisakh in our new mandala building due to the efforts of all sorts of people has come to fruition. And we're able to meditate here and do the Vaisakh ceremony, which is a bit later than many people do it. But in fact, Vaisakh is traditionally celebrated anywhere from April to June, depending on the solar and lunar calendars. This happens to be the new moon, as a matter of fact. As I say, today we can commemorate Vaisakh, which often is used to commemorate the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and parinirvana, or only the Buddha's birth, depending upon the country. We celebrate Vaisakh out of gratitude, not just for something far into the past, but for the continuing impact upon it in our daily lives. For in our practice, we are practicing, as it were, the life of the Buddha. More than 25 centuries have passed since that time. Much has changed in the world. And we are in the entire other end of the globe, away from where the events took place. And although, as I said, these events were a long time ago, yet the freshness of them come down to us, to the present day. And we still, all this time afterwards, take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The Buddha said that he had uncovered an old path that had become neglected and overgrown. And that he had cleared the path and made it available for people to travel. He even said that in the long run the path would be overgrown again until it would entirely disappear from view. It is our training and our commitment to that training that causes the path to still be open. Each time in history, it has threatened to become overgrown and disappear. People have come along who, through their devotion to practice and training, have caused a renewal of it. a renewal occurring due to attention to practice and training as being the most important aspects of the teaching of the Buddha. Sometimes it threatens to be overgrown by too much attention to detail, if I can put it that way, or too much attention to preserving institutions, or too much attention to trying to dredge up the past, or too much attention to trying to reproduce other cultures, or too much attention to the ways of a particular society, thinking that the ways of that society are the same thing as the Buddha Dharma. These are all very common mistakes. The mistake I just mentioned comes down to the present day. It is not just simply a fault of Chinese or Tibetan societies who sometimes mistake their own cultures for the Dharma. But this is the same thing as occurs in the West as well, where our strong sense of the superiority of our culture leads us to think that what the Buddha was trying to point out was, in some way, the beliefs, opinions, and views of our own culture. This is a frequent mistake and only causes people to be confirmed in their own opinions. As I've said many times before, the teaching of the Buddha can only be understood by the practice of it. Many people wish to be confirmed in their own opinions and do not wish those opinions and views to be challenged. Many others wish to run along with the crowd. Whichever way the wind blows, they go towards it. Out of fear, sometimes out of lack of imagination. The Dharma, as I've said many times, is doing something about ourselves. And as Dogen has pointed out, the views of most people are fickle. They change from one extreme to the other quite easily. The views in the broad society are fickle. They change. Is often a fatal mistake that people make in thinking that change is in and of itself a type of progress. Somebody has pointed out this is something that people have only believed since the Victorian era and the Industrial Revolution. Looking at history, of course, we see how wrong they have been proved. to undertake practice is to continue going up that path, no matter what other people's opinions may be. Other people's opinions are to some degree a name for the eight worldly winds. People like what we're doing. It becomes very, very popular. Then some teacher or other fouls up, and people don't like it and criticize it. Then some teacher becomes popular, or some fragment of the Buddha's teachings become useful. Then people like it again. Sometimes the people who accompany us on the path decide they don't want to do it anymore. Sometimes we encounter difficulties from fellow practitioners. Sometimes, eventually, the teacher passes away. Something happens and we cannot attend the temple like we used to. As a matter of fact, I think the COVID situation is a great test of people's training and a great way of examining what people bring to their training. Do people simply train and practice and meditate because they gain a type of soothing benefit from it? Or do they put effort into it? There is the phrase, we must always be disturbed by the truth. This means that if we are open to the practice, then there will always arise something that causes us to puzzle over, question, look at what we're doing, put us in a difficult situation. Too many people think of the Dharma as something that is supposed to agree with their opinions, make them comfortable in their opinions, and give them something to bludgeon other people with. But that is in fact not so at all. The proof of the Dharma is in what you, what I do. Not in theories and ideas and views. Think of it this way. Temples and meditation groups are very helpful, but people have practiced in their absence. Scriptures and talks are very helpful, but people have practiced in their absence. For us, particularly in the West, there have been people who undertook Buddhist practice without any support whatsoever. There was one person in the late 1800s in Germany, in rural Germany, who gave up whatever position he had, in order to devote himself to practice of the Dharma. And whenever he ran out of funds, he would take an agricultural job in a local farm in order to support himself. But he spent his time practicing. He did not have, quote-unquote, the scriptures in the original. He did not have charismatic teachers. He did not have temples and meditation groups to go to. And he lived in uncertain times. But inspired by the Dharma, he undertook practice. When I was a teenager, I used to get the Buddhist pamphlets, the Wheel and Bodhi Leaf publications from the Buddhist Publication Society in Sri Lanka. They would take 3 to 6 months to arrive. And I remember receiving the 1972 booklet about their organization, which included letters from people who had received their pamphlets, and how inspired I was by all these people in all sorts of obscure places in North America on their own who were practicing the Dharma. In all sorts, as a matter of fact, sometimes people would discover that there was another practitioner in the same neighborhood that they hadn't even realized there was anybody else doing it. There have been people practicing the Dharma in what we call the West from at least the 1700s and probably before, inspired by a pitcher. The irony is that Christian missionaries, in trying to get as much information as possible so they could convert people in the East, ended up introducing a lot of people in the West to Buddhist practice. Because whereas they thought by publishing all the information they were going to put people off, in fact they caused people to be attracted to it. The number of people brought to the practice of the Dharma by a statue of Kuan Yin have just been numerous. Or the publication of The Light of Asia by Sir Edward Arnold in 1879. That resulted in innumerable people taking up practice of the Dharma in some way or another. We know this because of the alarm it aroused in popular media. There were societies formed in various major cities in the West to try to figure out how to combat this new interest in an Asian religion. There were sermons from pulpits denouncing the new interest. There was ridicule applied to what were called silly young women who lit incense. The same thing goes on nowadays, as I've mentioned to some people about attending a scholarly conference on Eastern monasticism, I think it was called. And it was the interesting thing whereby the scholars assembled did not regard, particularly the Western Buddhist monks who were there, did not regard them with any level of seriousness at all. And rather, we were a source of somewhat wry humor and slight ridicule. Of course, the Dharma has gained, mainly through the Dalai Lama, a good reputation in the West. But that can change. One's practice must not end up being determined or reliant upon the opinions of the world. When a monk is ordained in Mongolia, it was traditional for the senior monks, after the ceremony, to scatter flowers over the people who had been ordained. And wish that they would come to the end of their lives on the path. And so I wish for myself and for all of you. May we meet the end of our lives while on the path of training. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.